Okay, we're starting. I'm gonna start with a thought question. It's a theoretical situation. Don't get too emotionally attached to it. Okay, it's not a happy theoretical situation. So don't get too emotionally attached. I'll just pretend anyways. Okay, it's set. The setting for this hypothetical thought question is 50 years in the future. Hi, Brecha, and hi, Brecha again.
Hi.
Okay, here's the question.
Oh, I gave you a shout out to my yeshiva students today. I told them all to listen to your Carl Rogers Rosh Hashanah.
Aww. Oh, we love Carl Rogers, don't we? And what's her name? Ellen West. Okay, the classic Ellen West. Okay, hi, Brecha. Also, other Brecha. Okay, so here's the question, ready? And I want you guys all to think about it. I first encountered this in my honors philosophy class at Stern College, which happily I didn't take till my last semester. Otherwise, I probably would have majored in philosophy, and like, where would that have gotten me? But fascinating question, okay? You have two people. Let's call them Reuven and Shimon. No, let's not. Let's call them, whatever. Let's call them Reuven and Shimon, okay? Reuven and Shimon are married to two women whose names are Sarah and Rivka, okay? Now, again, this is 50 years in the future, and they're pretend, so don't get too emotionally, you know, whatever. But unfortunately, Reuven's wife, let's call them Avram's wife, Sarah, is in a car accident, and basically is totally, you know, whatever. Her body is completely, whatever happens to people's bodies in really bad car accidents, except that her head is totally intact, okay? Her brain is completely fine, but the rest of her body shuts down and dies, and she dies. Yitzchak's wife, Rivka, gets a horribly debilitating brain disease, and her brain decays within a matter of weeks, but the rest of her body is totally fine. So since this is 50 years in the future, the doctors quickly helicopter down to the car accident that Sarah was in, remove her brain, and do a brain transplant into Rivka's body. Then, after some, you know, medication and whatever else, she wakes up. Who wakes up? Is it Sarah or is it Rivka? And whose wife is it? Which one of these men's wives is alive? Avraham's or Yitzchak's? What do you think? For the record, obviously there's no right answer, right? Because this hasn't happened yet. So we don't really know what would happen. So I'm not asking for the right answer. I'm asking what you think when that person wakes up. Is it Sarah or is it Rivka? Who do you think it would be? I'm not letting you guys all stay on mute. I'm going to make every one of you answer it. So you may as well just tell me what's going on in your head.
I think it would, I don't know the names. I lost track. But I think it would be the brain. I guess it could be the one. But I think the brain, because like the brain is what's telling the body what to do and how to act and like, without the brain, like, body can't function without, like, the nerves and, like, everything that the body's sending a signal to the body. So I think the brain would be more essential in a way.
Good. So you're saying the brain is the command center of the body. So if you put that brain in someone else's body, that's the command center. So the person who would wake up would be whoever has the, whoever the command center belongs to.
Yes, but I think on like if you're looking at somebody, you're not looking at someone's brain, you're looking at their body.
Right. So you're saying
like I would see their body. So I guess when the person walks in, like the person whose body it is, their husband would be like, "Oh, that's my wife." Because like right. When you look at the body.
You're saying everyone's going to think that it's Rivka. Meaning, if you don't know the person at brain transplant, you think that it's Rivka because that's who you see. But you're saying you think that like who would Rivka be? Right? Would Rivka be herself or would she suddenly be Sarah? Would she have the personality and the disposition and whatever and the past and the programming and the memories of Sarah? That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Who else has a thought on this?
So it's interesting that you said brain transplant because I would agree and say also it's a body transplant because the brain is where your identity and your memories and everything is. So I think your identity and memories are what make you.
That is a fascinating critique. You're like, it wasn't a brain transplant, it was a body transplant. You just took all of the organs of one person and put them in the one most important organ of the other. That's a fascinating way of looking at it. Okay, good. What else? Who else has an opinion? Everyone else has an opinion, so what are they? Yeah, tell me what you're thinking.
Similar to Bracha, but I didn't think of those words. I have put it.
Okay, but you agree that you think that it's the person whose brain it is who would wake up.
mean, I don't know how, like, scientifically it works, if, like, your brain readjusts to whatever, but, yeah, I assume it's the same brain.
None of us know, right? But that's the question, right? Like, if this would happen, and, I mean, assuming God willing, I guess, right? There's a time in the future where this could happen. Someone is going to wake up. Someone is going to wake up. And, halakhically, we're going to have a psak on whose wife it is, which is just fascinating. But also, someone will wake up. Who will that be? We could theorize it about it now. Does anyone disagree? Does anyone think that it would be somebody else? Like, does anyone think that it would not be the person whose brain it is who would wake up?
Yeah, I don't think it would be the person whose brain it is.
Tell me more, Brecha. Keep going.
I think it would, like, you know, the same way we have, like, heart transplants and stuff like that. Like, we would just view it as an organ. Somehow it would work out.
Good. Like, you're like, good. Tell me more. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, yeah, like, it would just be, like, another organ, and, like, I think people are also, I mean, I know the brain is, like, the seat of everything, but people are also, like, you know, it's, like, nature versus nurture. I mean, I guess everything is, like, held in the brain, but, like, people are comprised of more than their brain. I don't know. I feel like there's more here.
Good. Okay, good. So you're saying, like, I hear the argument about the brain, but I just feel like people are more than that. Even though we know how important the brain is, but there's just something missing for you that you feel like, you know, I don't think we're so literal about that. I don't think people are actually just their brain. There's more to them. So actually the person who would wake up is the person who there's more to.
Like, can it be person C?
Like a totally different, like a new personality? It could be anybody.
They have one person's brain, but then another person's body. So, like, how people are going to look at them is going to be one way, but not, like, I don't know, I don't think consistent with either one.
Right. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to find out. There are certain people in this world, I might or might not be related to one of them, who, like, believes that after people die, their heads should be, like, chopped off and then frozen. So that in the time in the future where we could figure out how to, like, build people fake bodies and or, like, revive the dead in that kind of way, their brain will be completely intact and, like, frozen at the time of death. So, like, their philosophy is kind of like that. As long as I have my brain, I have myself. So does anyone else want to volunteer? Eliana or Vacheva, we haven't heard from you, or Rachel? Okay, good. So what's at the root of this question, right? What's at the root of this philosophical question?
What makes you you?
Good, right? What makes you you? Who are we? What makes us ourselves? Is it our bodies? Our brains? Is it something else? Is it a combination? Is it neither? Right? It's like it's an interesting question because it basically, like, physically literalizes the question we all have about our own souls and our own selves. Who are we? And again, we don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen. So what's the Torah's opinion about this? Because anyone think about a specific mitzvah? Okay, so we know the Torah's opinion about this, right? Which is that our souls and our bodies are not the same thing. How do we know that from the Torah? There are at least two specific mitzvos that talk about this, that talk about the difference between our souls and our bodies. Our souls and ourselves, so to speak, in some way. Not ourselves, our souls and our bodies. What is it? Ariel, you're saying something, but I can't hear you because you're on mute.
Oh, no, I was thinking. I feel like somewhere in Shema, there's a distinction.
The full of Shema, maybe? Okay, I mean, we use the word nefesh and to return. Okay, so that's good. That's like a literal thing, right? We have different words that refer to different pieces of a human, right? But there's two mitzvos. There's two mitzvos that the real, like, core assumption of the mitzvah is that the body and the soul are different from each other. Can anyone think of one or two of those mitzvos?
I think maybe the mitzvah that we have to take care of our body, because if our soul is everything, then we just have to do mitzvahs and not take care of our body, because our soul would take care of our body for us.
Fascinating. Okay, Brecha, I like what you're saying. The source that I have for saying that there's at least two mitzvahs is Rav Hirsch. I am doing, Repurge has three sections that talk about this, and I was going to talk about the first and the third, and you're talking about the second. Okay, so very good, Bracha, okay? You one-upped me. I was going to just skip that section because I think it's a little less literal than the other two, or less explicit than the other two, but I agree with you, right? Repurge includes that, which is, I'll tell you, I'll read the regard for one's own body, which includes suicide, self-injury, self-ruin, and self-preservation. And two mitzvot there. Okay, I'm actually going to skip that one. The first that Rav Hirsch talks about, I'm going to share this on my store sheet, is a mitzvah that we are not familiar with, happily, these days. I won't even say these days. We are happily not very familiar with it, which is the mitzvah that if you, well, I'll read it to you inside. Ready? Here we go. V'chi yihiya ba'ish chit mishpat maves v'humas. If a man is accused of a criminal crime, a capital crime, and is put to death by the Beis Din, and he dies, the salisa oso al eitz, and you hang him on a tree. Lo salin nivlaso al haetz ki kavor tik berenu bayom ahu. You should not leave his body on the tree. You should bury him that day, meaning before sunset of that day. Ki kilolas elokim toloi velo sitame es admosecha asher Hashem lakach onasein lecha nachala. Right, because it's a curse. It's like a, I don't know how to translate this. For an impaled body is an affront to God, you shall not defile the land of the Lord that your eye has given to you to possess, okay? But basically, if someone is accused of a capital punishment and is killed, you shouldn't leave him hanging on a tree to the next day. Now, what's our major question with this? Is there a capital punishment in which someone is hung on a tree? Is that one of the Arba Misos based in, they hang somebody on a tree? Or else, like, I'm pretty sure not, right? Good, so I actually thought, and I think I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure I'm wrong, that anyone who was killed by capital crime, you hang their body from a tree after they're killed, right? And that's, the Pesach says that, right? It says, V'chi yebecha ish mishpat maves v'humas, right? He's already dead, and after he's dead, you hang him on a tree. But Rashi says it's only for people who are stoned, and Ramban says it's not even only for people who are stoned, again, coming from a Gemara that they're learning up, not only from people who are stoned, but people who are stoned because of Megadif, which is blaspheming God, like cursing God publicly, or Vodazara. And you hang them up specifically after they're killed so that people say, oh my God, what happened to that guy? And you say, well, he was killed because he did a Vodazara. He was killed because he was a Megadif, right? So it makes those two capital sins like extra. Okay, but even that person who was evil, right? So evil that you had to kill him. Hi, Jeff.
Can I say thank you?
Sure. Jeff's going to say thank you for a second. Pause. This dramatic. Here.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for your support and gifts and thoughtful flowers, which made our house pretty, and the games and the cookies, the delicious cookies that we ate. It told us we had to finish them in 48 hours. I think we finished them in like 12 hours, all of them. So anyway, thank you very much for your support, and enjoy the rest of the shiur.
Okay, it was really nice. Okay, so even that, right? A criminal who's accused of a capital punishment, and the two worst capital punishments, so to speak, and is hung on a tree, his body you're not allowed to leave on the tree overnight. Okay, and let's learn why. Again, quoting Rav Hirsch. Here we go. Even one who has been executed on account of a criminal offense should not be left above the earth after sunset, as soon as his death has been ascertained. You should no longer recognize the criminal in the dead man. Okay, so that's very explicit. You should no longer recognize the criminal in the dead man. You now have a dead body. It's not the criminal anymore. You've killed him. Justice has been served. And now you have no reason to treat his body as if it is not a regular body, which deserves a certain amount of care from you to bury it, etc., according to halachos, which now completely pertain to this body. From the passage quoted above, the oral law deduces the general rule that we should not delay, not delta, we should not delay the burial of our dead longer than is absolutely necessary, unless the delay is necessary for a worthy burial. So that's where we get the halachos, fascinating, right, from a criminal. That's where we get the halachos of burying the dead. The time frame that it takes to bury the dead, the only reason that you're allowed to delay the burial of the dead is if that's for the personality, if it's for the soul. Right, if it's a more worthy or more respectful burial for the person, then you're allowed to delay it. Otherwise, you no longer recognize the criminal in the dead man. Okay, what's the other mitzvah? And we're going to learn this one a little bit more in depth. What's the other mitzvah that talks about the separation, basically, between the body and the soul that we believe? By the way, I'm a little bit shirking the question, right? Like, these mitzvahs are not going to answer whether or not it's going to be Sarah or Rivka who wakes up, right? But that's not really the point. So, like, don't keep expecting me to answer that question. I'm not going to answer it. I have no idea. We'll have to see when that time comes. And I am fascinated about what the halachic psak will be about whose wife that is, right? But that being said, right now we're learning, again, what is that separation between soul and body, which is certainly a Jewish concept, okay? The next one is, and it's actually a little bit of a surprising place to learn this, I think, but I, for some reason, have a very fond space for this mitzvah. It's in Parshas Re'eh, which is my favorite parsha. It has fantastic mitzvahs, many, many of them. I love Devarim. Okay, ready? Devarim. Bani matem l'Hashem Elokeichan. Have you heard that before? Yes. Very famous quote. Do you know what pasuk that introduces? This is, I think, the only place I tried to look up Bani matem. This is the only place that I found Bani matem. This is the only place in the Torah. I think I heard somewhere that there are three, this is one of three places in which people, in which Bnei Israel are referred to as Banim to Hashem, but I think this is the only place that it says, Mamish this, Bani matem l'Hashem Elokeichan, like that explicitly, as opposed to referring to Bnei Israel in some capacity as Banim. I have to look that up because I didn't find it. Okay, Bani matem l'Hashem Elokeichan, but this is where it is. What does that, what mitzvah does that introduce? Ready? Lo tisgodedu velo tesimu karcha ben yinechem. You should not tisgodedu, you should not make a cut for yourself. You should not wound yourself. Velo tesimu karcha ben yinechem amesen. You should not make a bald spot between your eyes over a dead body. It's basically the mitzvah of when somebody else dies, you are not allowed to make a permanent memorial or mourning, injury to your own body. You ever guys seen it? You ever seen these, like, people with tattoos? I mean, I just saw this, like, as I was preparing this chabura. But, like, people with tattoos sometimes have, like, a picture of somebody, and it's, like, R.I.P. Ivan, and it has, like, their dates. So that's, like, exactly this mitzvah. You're not allowed to do that. Whether or not it's in memorial of Ivan, or whether or not it's in mourning for Ivan, you can't make a tattoo on your own body in commemoration, or injure yourself in any capacity over somebody who dies. And isn't that interesting? This is the pasuk that's introduced, Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokeichem. Meaning, it's not kosher, Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokeichem, keep kosher. It's not Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokeichem, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Right? If I was writing the Torah, I would have had a lot of places to put Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokeichem that was not here. But it's here. So why is it here? And this is, like, fascinating. We're going to get a little bit more into this. And again, next time we're going to do kind of, like, more of, like, a workshop-y tshuva thing. But right now we're talking about these concepts. Soul. What's our soul? What's the soul of the Jewish people? How do we conceptualize these things? Ariella, tell me. What's the relationship between Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokeichem and Lotis Go to do?
Well, I think that when somebody, I think I heard this in a parsha, but when somebody passes away, like, the reason that someone would make the cut or the bald spot is because, like, kind of they miss them so much or something like that. But kind of remembering that, like, Bani Matem L'Hashem, like, we're all Hashem's, like, we're all Hashem's children. I forgot what it was.
No, you're good. You're good. You got Sforno. That was great. Is that what you were going to say, or you have something more?
I think there was something more to it.
There was, because you're going to listen to Sforno's way of putting it, which is beautiful, but it's the same thing that you're saying. Okay? And he says this. When somebody dies, right? Somebody dies and you really want to make a cut on your body, you want to tattoo Ivan's face on your arm, or you really want to do that, right? And this is telling you not to do it. And it's going to tell you that that's how it's linked to Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokeichem. And this is actually my favorite parish on this. I think it's, like, beautiful the way that he says it. She'ein ro'oi laharos tachlis hada'aga v'hatzar ala karov ha'meis. It's not proper. It's not ro'oi. It's not appropriate. It's not proper. I don't know. It's not right to be, like, essentially in angst and pain and mourning over a relative that dies. Why? Kishanisher karov nichbad mimenu b'mala. Because you always have a closer relative that's still alive, who is God. I don't care how close this person is to you, this pasuk is saying to you. You never have to be essentially in mourning over any person, because your closest relationship is always alive, and that's God. Lefichach atem banim la'ashem, shehu avichem, kayim la'ad. Your father in heaven is still alive. Ein ro'ay shati da'agu b'siz ablu b'tachlis ashud meis. You don't have to be so essentially in mourning over anyone who dies. Isn't that a beautiful thing? By the way, I, like, didn't say it, but, like, I'm happy that Jeff came up, because then I was like, I should have started this out. Right, like, there's a reason that I'm thinking about these kinds of concepts of the body and the soul and death, right, after Jeff's mom just passed away. And it's important sometimes to learn it. And again, it's essentially linked to tshuva in a very explicit mind of Baruch Dessler, which is what we're going to a little bit get to now and get to much more next time, okay? So again, like, these concepts are important. Sometimes we're afraid to talk about them a little bit. But if you learn, again, so, like, what the Torah teaches us about, it's beautiful and it's comforting and it's tshuva also. Okay, good. What's another explanation for that? Bonem atem l'shem elokeichem, lo tisgo to do. What might be another way you could teach why those two things are related?
Because you're a child of Hashem, so it's not appropriate for you to go around with your body full of punches and marks.
Okay, good. So,
like a child of the king?
Yeah, I do think that somebody says that. I didn't put it in because I found that to be a little difficult, because it's really dependent on Kedusha, right? And if it's really dependent on Kedusha, then it just brings up more of a question, which is, why isn't it that it doesn't say, don't eat not kosher, right? Then why, like, the things that we do als Kedusha, why wouldn't you find banan tamal? What'd you say?
Same thing for a Kohen. They're like, Kohen Gadol has to always have his hair trimmed, always look nice, because he represents he goes into the Kodesh fashion, and he's right. Like the most holiest person.
Right. So. No, I agree with you, Ben. Why wouldn't you find banan tamal shem elokeichem there? You know?
Well, then you're speaking about one person, not the individual.
Right.
I mean, the individual, not the whole class.
Right. I do hear you, and I do think that somebody said it. I'll try to find who it was. I didn't print it because I thought there was, like, still a question there. Good. What else? But thank you, Rachel. You are right. So I read somebody who said that, and then there was my own husband to type it out. But okay, you're right. Good. What else?
Maybe, like, it hurts Hashem when you hurt yourself because you're, like, his children.
But this interesting. It's less, meaning there's a separate mitzvah about not injuring yourself. This is really the mitzvah about not injuring yourself when somebody dies. It's really the mitzvah of not making a permanent commemoration, basically, or really not displaying such angst that it leads you to hurting yourself more than it is about the hurting yourself, because there's another mitzvah about that, which again, Rachel, maybe also hits on what you're saying, right? There's a separate mitzvah about not mutilating yourself separately, which is what Hirsch quoted in the one that Bracha was mischaving to that I skipped. Okay, here's, let's read Ibn Ezra. Achar shetidu she'atem banim l'Hashem. After you know that you're children, when you really feel like you're the children of the Lord, v'hu ohev eschem yoseh me'av l'ben, and he loves you even more than a father loves his children, al titagu al kol ma she'yaseh. Don't be so worried about anything that he does. Ki kol asher yaseh l'tovhu, v'im tivinuhu, kasher lo yivnu habanim hakatanim ma'aseh avim. In the same way that if you don't understand what Hashem does, just like little children don't understand what Hashem does, rak yismichu alav kein ta'asu gam atem. Just rely on him, and that's what you should do, right? We actually hear this hashkafa. I think this is probably one of the most popular hashkafas that you hear about, like, why bad things happen to good people. We don't understand it. We're coming in partway through the movie, right? It's like, this is, we have to rely on Hashem, banim atem l'Hashem elokeichem, right? So this is actually, like, a relatively popular, I would say, approach to it, okay? Let's learn the Kliyak. What's his approach? Lefi, she'umas mitztarim kadin al davar avad. That guy with the tattoo of Ivan, okay, I understand why he's doing it, right? Or, like, I understand at least from his perspective why he's doing it. Mitztarim kadin, like, again, they're in essential mourning. They're in essential pain on something that they lost. Asher holech velo yashuv. Because they lost something that isn't coming back. Aval ata, but you, lo kein. It's not what it's like for you guys. It's not what it's like for you guys, bani matem l'shem l'keichem. Ki b'chabachar Hashem li'os l'olam segula. Okay, then he goes into segula. It's a treasure. V'gol segulas malachim. Hainu davar shemichnasim la'otzer. Anything that's a treasure, Hashem keeps in the treasure. Al kach gadosh baruch hu machnis la'otzer nafshos l'tadikim atahoros. Right, basically that Hashem keeps. Again, we don't know exactly what this means. It's a metaphoric. We don't understand it as humans. I don't understand it. Maybe you do. I do not understand it. But I understand the concept, right? The concept being that Hashem takes care of our souls. We have not lost something. Eino davar ha'avad. It is not something that's lost. When a Jewish soul dies, it is not something that is lost. It is not something that is holech velo yoshu. It has not gone and will not return. Eino davar ha'avad. It's not something that's lost. V'lama yitztar al davar cheyesh l'metzias. Why are you so upset about something that still exists? It's good, right? It's beautiful. I love it because it's like those are pashtunim, you know? Sforno, even Ezra, Kliyakar, even, right? They're pashtunim. That's the pshat of this mitzvah. is that when a person dies, there's something else that's still there. There's something else that Hashem is still watching over. There's something else that is still existent. Hi, Emily. So nice to see your face again. I know you just turned your video back on. Good, right? So, interestingly, has anyone ever wondered about this? This is like, Rav Hirsch talks about it when man is created, that this is actually essentially different from animals, right? Anyone ever wondered, like, okay, we had this, like, cicada infestation here. They called it the cicada jeddon, like, instead of Armageddon, where we had, like, a bajillion million. There was, like, literally millions and millions and millions, if not billions of cicadas. Like, every 17 years, they come out and they hatch and they, like, fly around and make your lives miserable for, like, 3 weeks, and then they all die. Okay, so, like, as you were walking around, like, literally killing dozens of cicadas, I personally am a cicada killer. Just rolling your stroller down, you're killing cicadas, you're stepping on them, and, like, it's disgusting. And ever thought about this? Like, or when you step on an ant, or like when you kill a fly and you're like, the fly was alive and now it's dead. Like, what happened to the fly's soul? You guys ever think that? Like, what happened to the fly? You know, like when you kill an animal or like a deer, if you see a dead deer on the road and you're like, what happened to the deer that was alive and now it's not alive anymore? Right? So, of course, it's just like fascinating. I never thought about this before, but he talks about this when man is created. He says this. The pasuk says, Hashem created man from the dust of the ground, or dust from the ground, really. And he breathes into his countenance the breath of life, neshama, living soul. And man becomes a living creature. So the fascinating question about this pasuk, which I would not have thought about without Rav Hirsch, is that every creature is called a nefesh chaya. And he says, it's very interesting that at the end of this pasuk, it doesn't say, Vayihi ha'adam. Hashem breathed into him a neshama and he became man. Right? It's that Hashem breathed into him a neshama and he became a living creature. In the same way that I called an insect a living creature a few psukim ago. And a fish, a different kind of living creature. Everything, a cows are a living creature. And man is also now a living creature. Like, it's a little a little anticlimactic. So he says here, this verse contains the whole secret of man's essence. Not the mere fact that he became a living person, but the manner in which he became so, that is the whole distinction of man. What's the most important pasuk, word of this pasuk, therefore? What's the most important word of this pasuk? Cordero of Hirsch. What did he just say there? And that is what distinguishes him from all living creatures. This pasuk does tell you what distinguishes him from all living creatures, but it isn't l'nefesh chaya. It isn't what he becomes. That's not the part that distinguishes him from all living creatures. That's something that he shares with all living creatures. 1 second. Sorry. What is something that that makes him separate from all living creatures? Which word?
Nishma.
Nope. I mean, yes, right? Yes, you are right. Because Hashem breathed into him a nishmas chayim, and that's what made him different. So you're right, yes. But, like, which part of this pasuk are we learning it out from? Vayehi. That's what made him. That's the difference between man and animals, is what made him a nefesh chaya. And like Ariella said, what makes man a nefesh chaya? Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. Because Hashem breathed into him the breath of life. What makes other creatures living? They're just born from the ground. And that's what he said. I'm just disclaiming that I'm ignoring my baby on purpose. I'm trying to sleep train him, so don't think that I'm cruel and I can't hear him. I'm just, poor guy is being sleep trained. Okay, herein lies the nobility and the immortality of man, and this is the whole source of his freedom. That which gives the animal its individuality emanates from the earth and must eventually return to the earth. Not so that which makes man a living personality. When the soul departs from his body, the vital soul is not buried with his remains, for man's soul is bound up with his spirit, not his body. Okay, so again, this is what he says. What happens to the cicadas? It's interesting, I never thought about it. It's like the cicadas, in the same way that Hashem, so to speak, created the cicadas from the earth, the cicada's souls also come from the earth. And so do the deer's souls, and the lion's souls, and the squirrel's souls. They come from the earth, and when they die, their souls go back into the earth. And man, his body was created from the earth, but vayihi hadam lenefesh chaya. How did he become living? Through vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. And therefore, when a man dies, his soul goes back to God. When a spirit departs from the body, the vital soul is not buried with the remains. For man's soul is bound up with his spirit, not his body. I don't know what he means by spirit versus soul. This is why his physical survival and health does not depend on his body alone. The survival of a man cannot be predicted with the same degree of accuracy as the survival of an animal. There is something in man that defies prediction. Love that. That is rehearsed, right? Like, just, there is something in man that defies prediction. And again, I was thinking about this in terms of Jeff's mom, where, like, you know, they kept saying, you know, okay, it's going to be Motei Shabbos or Sunday. They were like, I'd be surprised if the hospice nurses who do this like professionally, I'm going to be surprised if she makes it to the next weekend. The next weekend's there. It's going to be Motei Shabbos or Sunday. Sunday I woke up, I'm like, am I having a normal day with the kids? Am I not? Jeff was already in New York, right? And she passed away Tuesday evening. There's something in that that defies prediction. We don't know what people's souls will do. People's souls are different than their bodies. I need to plug in my computer. That's man for you. There's something in man that defies prediction. Okay, so what does this have to do? Okay, one more minute and then we're gonna stop and continue more next time. Interestingly, what's the brand of science that feels the same way? Which brand of, it's not a brand of science, I don't know what to say. Which scientific study feels the same way that we do? That there's something different from man's body, even his brain, than his soul. There's something else to man, more than his brain, more than his body. Anyone know? It's a study of near-death experiences, which is, again, a scientific, category of research conducted by doctors. Jeff is in the middle of reading a whole book about it. I'm going to read it afterwards, and then I'll have a lot more to say about it. So all I can say right now is what I read, like, online and listened to in a different year, and then what Jeff has been telling me. All right, but near-death experiences say that basically exactly this. The body begins to shut down completely. If they measure brain scan waves, they see when people are having these kind of, like, imagery, these near-death experiences, it isn't that their brain is being more active, it's that their brain is shutting down. Their brain is becoming much and much less active, and they have these whole experiences that, again, there are thousands upon thousands of them that have been collected and shown that there's no way the person would have known it otherwise, right? Like, there's one that I was listening to, I heard it quoted by somebody else who was talking about these studies of this, in which, like, the person was like, you know, I started wandering around the hospital and I see that, like, on the third floor outside the window, there's, like, a lost shoe, you should throw it out. And the doctor, like, looked out the window and, like, there's no way he couldn't see the room, and he wandered around the third floor and, like, found the shoe outside, right? Or with near-death experiences in which people who are almost dead encounter someone else who's dead, but someone else who no one knows yet is dead, but is dead. And then the people who wake up from their near-death experiences are the ones who alert the police that this other person is dead because they encountered them. Right? Like, those kinds of stories, like, disproving one doesn't disprove thousands of them, but if even one of them is true, it essentially has to change how we think about the soul and the body. So actually, that brand, so to speak, of research is trying to disassociate our obsession with the brain being the seat of the soul for the body, and that the body and the soul are different. Okay, so good. What does that have to do with tshuva? And then we're going to go much more into tshuva next time with the Maamar of Dessler, which is going to blow your mind. I really hope you can all come next time. It was like, this is actually how I started down this rabbit hole, is because someone quoted this Rav Dessler, and I'm like, I need to learn that inside. So that's what we're going to be doing next time. Okay, what's the relationship between this and tshuva? I learned this from Rav Leuchter this year, who said it explicitly, which I never really thought about per se before he said it, which is why Rav Leuchter, which is one of the reasons that I am a Talmud, so to speak, which is that he said that tshuva is not really about our actions. If we look at the at what we say in Vidui and Al-Chait, they're not on, like, we don't pick some of the 613 mitzvot and talk about Vidui and Harata on having done actions wrong. What we really talk about and what we really mean when we do tshuva is what we have done to our souls. What our choices based on what we do and what we don't do, the mitzvot that we choose to do, the averos that we choose to do, what that does to us, which is a totally different thing. And if you just look, I never really thought about this. If you look at this text of Vidui, we don't say on that because we didn't eat kosher and because we, right? Like, look at this, ashamnu, we're guilty, right? We're bagadnu, we've betrayed you. Gazalnu, dibarnu dofi, hevinu, hirshanu, we've corrupted ourselves. Zadnu, chamasnu, tafalnu shaker, yatsnu ra. These aren't mitzvos. Yatsnu ra. It's not a mitzvah. Kizavnu, latsnu, maranu. Right? What are these? They're words about our character. They're words about what we've done to our soul. When we do tshuva, and that's what we're going to be doing next time, is like a much more like kind of in detail going through Rav Dessler's kind of like path, so to speak, about how to make this practical. What do we do with this now? But the stakes of tshuva is not our actions, it's our souls. What we do to ourselves. And Rav Dessler has actually like a fascinating way of basically saying, like, how do we put that back together? That's the process of tshuva. We're not just deciding actions to do or not do next year. We need to be hitting at a level that is much deeper and much higher, which is our souls. How do we put our souls back together? And what does that mean? So right now I have to leave you at the cliffhanger. It's not quite practical yet. But still, I think... I'm going to read you one line from Desser just because I want it to haunt you for the next week, because like it's not fun if I don't do that. Okay? Desser says this. And again, this is in his Maamar on tshuva. Fascinating. He talks about death in his Maamar about tshuva. But listen to what he says. And again, the stakes of tshuva are our soul, which never dies. And this is what he says about it. V'zos l'das, you should know this. Under the heading, by the way, Mahus ha'adam nish'eres la'achar ha'misa. The heading this, I'm reading you one line. V'zos l'das, ki ein misas haguf, the death of the body, ein misas haguf, mishane be'etzem es matzavo ha'pnimi shel ha'adam. The death of the body changes nothing about the inner reality of a man. Souls are different from our bodies. Our brains are different than our bodies. Our souls are different than our brains and our bodies. And death has no effect on it. Exactly who you are and what you care about when you're living is exactly who you are and what you care about when you're dead. And Reb Desser does not just say this is my opinion, he brings chazals that prove it, and we're going to learn some of those next time, and it is fascinating, and then he tells us how to put ourselves back together. That's in the roster for next week. In the meantime, I hope you, I hope you have some sort of chizik or, I don't know, haunting by our souls. Our souls are real, and they don't leave us, and we stay ourselves, even after death. Ariella, your expression was exactly why I followed this rabbit hole into that, Rav Dessler, because like I was like, I had heard that ages ago and didn't know where it was from. And learning the Rav Dessler and then learning the chazals that Rav Dessler talks about, like, yeah. Okay, so next time we will do that. In the meantime...